May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight. For you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So Saul was in a tough spot. Saul was both a Roman citizen in the Roman Empire and a Jewish man, a Pharisee who grew up in the tribe of Benjamin. Because of who he was, Saul knew what it was to live under power, to live under imperial power that dominated and divided, power that threw legions of soldiers at people when they became a problem, power that would sanction violence to secure a place for itself. Saul, Roman and yet Jewish, must have had some distaste for that power, because he had grown up to become not a centurion, but a Pharisee, an expert in Jewish law, who helped the Jewish people keep the law so that they could live in right relationship with God, an expert in helping people navigate the rule of Rome so that power did not destroy them. The Pharisees knew the knife's edge balancing act of imperial subjugation well. They navigated it for generations, making calculated compromises to try to keep their people safe and preserve their way of life. Sometimes it worked out in their favor. In 63 BC, they opened the gates of Jerusalem to Rome to stop the Sadducees. Sometimes it didn't. In 4 BC, when they spoke too loudly against King Herod, and they and 6,000 of their followers were killed. Saul knew what that kind of power could do to his people. And because he knew, intimately and terrifyingly, he knew the danger that Jesus' followers posed to Jewish existence. The danger was real, and the risks were twofold. Jesus' followers were not only undermining Jewish laws and practices, the very thing the Pharisees were experts in, they were creating the kind of commotion that attracted the attention of Rome. Jesus had been one thing. Thousands baptized from every nation under heaven was an entirely different story. It was the kind of story that attracted the attention of Rome. The kind of story that forced empire into violent, self-protective action, into power over and violence towards Jewish people. Saul was in a tight spot. For his people's survival, this Jesus movement could not be allowed to grow. It had to be stopped, and he was the one to do it. They say that hurt people hurt people. If we don't work on it, if we don't think about what's happened, we tend to do unto others as they have done unto us. And so it makes sense that Saul, faced with out-of-control people of the way, would default to the tool empire used against his people, state-sanctioned violence. It makes sense that he would default to power over and violence towards. That's what he does at the beginning of our passage today. He gets permission for state-sanctioned violence. He uses the systems available to him, the high priest of the Sanhedrin, the political and religious council in Jerusalem, and asks for letters that give him the authority to kidnap people who follow Jesus. These letters could be shared at each synagogue he visited, allowing him to recruit others to join in his brute squad of enforcers. Saul's plan, from what we can see, was to use the kinds of tools that had been used against his people, against others. Power over and violence towards. Power from the high priest and the Sanhedrin, violence towards any who belonged to the way. Power that dominates and divides, power that throws violence at difference until there is no longer a group of people of the way, but a group of captives fearing death. Hurt people hurt people. We tend to do what has been done to us. The good news, friends, is that the story doesn't end here. Hurt people hurt people, yes, but healed people heal people. And Saul's life is about to change. Saul's life is about to change because God shows up. Like Moses, like Ezekiel, like Daniel, God shows up and changes everything. Jesus appears as a light from heaven. Saul drops to the ground like his forebears before him. Jesus cries out, "Saul, why do you persecute me?" Saul says, "Lord, who are you?" Jesus replies, "I am Jesus, who you are persecuting. Now get up and go into the city and you'll be told what to do." Saul then discovers that he can't see. The next 4 days of Saul's life are an intensive in a wholly different way of using power, in a wholly different way of following God. Where empire teaches power as a tool to dominate and divide, something to be secured with violence and control, the way of Jesus asks for something wholly different. The power of God is less power over and more power shared. God's power is shared. We know this from Genesis, when God dwells with their people in the garden. We know this from the Gospels, when Jesus shares his power with the disciples, promising that they will do greater works even than he. Saul learns this the hard way, from the profound vulnerability of being led unseeing down the road to Damascus, from the moment when Ananias, disciple of Jesus, lays his hands on him to restore his sight. Saul learns, as Jesus promises he will, that God's way with power is always sharing it, always expressed in relationship, always in and for the flourishing of a community. God's power is always changing. Changing Moses from shy shepherd to the one who leads God's people out of bondage, walking with Simon and Andrew as they grow from fishermen to apostles, healing the man at the beautiful gate so that he could leap and dance and praise a transformational God. Saul learns God's transforming ways as he is changed, from sighted to blind to sighted again, from persecutor to baptized, from one ready to kidnap and kill disciples to one who preaches that Jesus is the Messiah. When God uses power, it always leads to something new, to liberation, to healing, to change. God's power knows no limits. The one who would go after the one lost sheep, the one who would delight in finding the one lost coin or bring the fatted calf to celebrate the return of the younger son, acts with no limits for their people or their earth. The God who scatters seeds on all kinds of soil, who tears apart the very boundary between death and life, cannot be bound by human ends, by a human sense of right and wrong, but longs to reconcile all of creation to themselves. Saul learns this with his life. Saul, who stood by while Stephen was killed, who sought to terrorize a people into silence to limit the spread of the gospel with fear, even he is not beyond the redeeming reach of God. For when God uses power, it is always to make room for one more. By the time Saul regains his sight and breaks his fast, he is a different man, clamoring to be baptized, aching to preach, becoming almost immediately the focus of a different conspiracy to kill him for saying that Jesus is the Messiah. By the time Saul leaves Damascus, he is a different man, walking in a different way of life and a different way of using power. He's changed into a follower of the way. a follower of God's way. Friends, the parallels to today write themselves. It's no challenge to think of people using power or violence towards. It's no struggle to come up with stories of empire grasping to control people with fear. It's our daily reality. Like Saul, we are in a tight spot. Most of us sitting here are stuck like Saul, between oppressor and oppressed. Most of us sitting here have some power to fear and some power to use. Most of us sitting here have the privilege of choice, to do as has been done to us, or to do something else entirely, to hurt or to heal. Being people of the way in a time of empire asks of us what it asks of Ananias, asks of us what it asks of Saul, that we act not by the power of empire, but by the power of God. And God's power asks this: to keep sharing, to keep changing and growing, to keep inviting people in, to see the power of empire at work and know that it cannot long endure against the power of God. It cannot long endure against the ways of love. It cannot long endure against an always growing and changing community, marked by their love for one another and always inviting more people in. Thanks be to God. Amen.